This week's show with Ray Niles of Red Barn Samplers is sponsored by Sassy Jack Stitchery. The long-awaited opening of the permanent home for Sassy Jack Stitchery is within sight as progress has been made with various building code agencies. But that doesn't mean your stitching is on hold. Sassy Jack's continues to be your complete online source for charts, linen, threads, and the numerous accessories we all use to make needlework enjoyable. Be sure to check out the many sampler charts offered by Sassy Jacks, including those from Red Barn Samplers designer Ray Niles, this week's guest, and Sassy Jack's own collection of sassafras samplers. Contact Kim and she'll help you assemble threads and ground cloth for your next project. Also, visit the workshop section to sign up for the Summer House Stitch Works event, August 4 to 5, and the September Soiree online retreat, September 15 to 18. Be sure to sign up for the Cosmo Floss Club so you can build your collection of beautiful, solid, and variegated Cosmo floss. Make Sassy Jack Stitchery your local needlework store by visiting the website at sassyjackstitchery.com. And now, our conversation with Ray Niles of Red Barn Samplers. Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Beth Ellicott.
And you are listening to Fiber Talk, the twice weekly podcast for needlework artists. Our artist this week from Red Barn Samplers, Ray Niles. Ray, welcome.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Oh, we got things to learn here. All right. The first thing we got to learn, Beth and I were talking about barns because I used to live in corn and bean country in Illinois, and Beth lives in the country of northwestern Illinois, and we see barns getting torn down all the time. And we were talking about how, you know, the history of that. And your company named after your family barn, and from the pictures, that's one that's being kept up.
Yep, it is. In fact, so my husband and I have been married about 100 years. Well, really probably not that long, but it seems like it some days and other days it seems like yesterday. But we've been married a very, very long time. And when we first got married, we lived out here on this farm in a little white house. And we lived here about 4 or 5 years. And the red barn was still here, but it had been painted, but it wasn't, it didn't have tin on the roof or anything like that. So after about 4 or 5 years, we actually moved to town for a couple years, and then we built our forever house back out here where we had originally lived, tore down the old white house. And my husband is kind of a neat freak as a farmer. I mean, everything has to be put away, and it looks picturesque, and that is a source of pride for him, right? And so we decided that we would go ahead and side with siding the red barn and then put siding on the roof. And the barn is probably, we think it's a little over 100 years old, and it was originally built to be a horse barn. And there's actually some old tack that's still inside it, and it has a hayloft in it. And, you know, I had been working at a very popular technology company. After I left education, I joined this company for about 14 years, and I headed up their professional development team. And when I decided to fun tire, which if you're not familiar with what fun tirement is, it's when you get to choose what you want to do, right? So you know that you're not old enough to retire, but you're old enough to say, I'm out. And so when I fun tired, I knew that I wanted to do something with samplers. And I was very passionate about being able to tell the story of the stitcher who actually put together that sampler. And I'm reminded that a lot of times those young girls were not able to sign their name as a child because their father signed it. And as they got married, their husband signed it. And so the only time they signed their name to any of their work was in their needlework. And I decided that if I was going to reproduce samplers, I needed to have something that was important to me so that when people started asking questions about, well, what's this thing with Red Barn samplers, that I would have a story to tell. And so it was just one of those things. It was like, you know, what do I want this to be called? I wanted it to be something that was easy to remember, something that would maybe be, it would connect with being from Kansas or rural and maybe the values associated with that. And so Red Barn Samplers kind of grew out of that. It was kind of fun because then I was able to design my logo around that. And if you look at what my my marketing or my branding materials look like, they do kind of look like the barn. And it's been really fun to be able to tell that story, because I think there's a lot of people that would like to fund tire, but they're just not sure what they'd do with their time.
I'd like to fund tire, and I know exactly what I'd do with my time, every minute of it.
But it's a big red barn, and we actually have had people come by. We had one guy that painted it, like wanted to paint it for a picture. We've had several people take pictures of it.
It's so cool to see that barn, because where I lived northwest of Chicago, I mean, I'd ride my bike, go 2 miles outside of town, and I was right in the middle of corn and soybean mm-hmm. fields. And mm-hmm. I just seen so many barns get torn down, and I used to do a lot of photography, and I would go out and just photograph these old barns that were coming apart, and then some of the new ones that had been fixed up like yours. And, you know, it's just history that it's just a shame, but they're so expensive to keep up that you really got to be dedicated to it. And
well, and the nice thing is it's still being used. So my husband still has things that he uses it for. There's still equipment that's stored in there and things that he uses as he farms. So we farm about 1,500 acres, and he stays pretty busy doing that. And
what do you grow?
Again, when you fund... we do wheat, milo, soybeans, alfalfa, and then some irrigated crops like soybeans and milo. And then he has a small cow-calf herd as well.
Wow. That's busy. Ooh.
He's busy.
Ooh. That's
very busy.
That's all day, every day right there. Holy smokes.
It is. Yeah. It is.
Well, that's great, and it does. It gives you a nice logo for your business, and
right.
It says America. It's really great. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, no, you win. Then the other thing, before we get to the stitching, that because mm-hmm. you mentioned in somewhere bought Ben Franklin stores, and oh, that brought back some childhood memories, going down to the Ben Franklin store, but I didn't get painting with dog prints? I didn't get that one.
Okay. So on my website, I kind of give a little background about who I am and kind of where the artistic or artsy, or I would say artsy fartsy, but artsy type aspect of who I am came from. And I remember very distinctly staying at my grandparents that lived in Axtell, Kansas, which is right up by the Nebraska border. And I was staying there one summer for a couple days, and my grandmother took me with her to Seneca, Kansas, and we went to the Ben Franklin store there. And she let me pick out, they were these kits that you could buy that had little pots of oil paint in them and a paintbrush, and it was a paint by number. And when my grandmother passed several years back, I got those pictures back because I spent my time painting those instead of terrorizing her, I think. And she saved them all those years. And so I got those back, and they're actually hanging down in my studio just as a reminder that, you know, you never know what it is that's going to spark someone's interest when they think about how they're able to express themselves. And it's much like, you know, I was an educator for 22 years. It only takes one person saying, I wonder if, or have you thought about, and my grandmother saying to me, hey, I wonder if you'd be any good at this, put me on a path to where it made me think I could create anything. Now, was I very good at it? No, probably not. But I was lucky enough to have the grandmother on my father's side that encouraged it. And then I had my grandmother on my mother's side, and my mother was an only child. So I have three sisters. So us four girls were, you know, we were the cat's meow. And my grandparents always lived next door to us. And the other grandmother, Grandma Helen, she was a seamstress, and she could sew anything and just make beautiful, beautiful needlework. And so I think the desire to create came from both of them, but then also the desire to maybe work more with the needle was something that, you know, my grandmother Helen was able to say, yeah, you can do this. And I've saved several pieces from when I was younger, and they're atrocious, but they're the medals, right? They're the medals that I earned that said I finished.
Yep.
And so I just think we can't do enough to encourage people to want to do that, whether it's diamond painting or embroidery or cross stitch or, you know, whatever that they're wanting to do to express their creativity, I think that that's something that we should all be really open to doing.
Yeah, because if not, I think we people think they aren't creative. I always hear people say, oh, right. I can't do that. And you're like, right. No, yes, you can. Just try.
Right.
If the first one's not going to be perfect, but, you know, just keep trying. Let's, you know, it's a skill.
Well, and there's so many people out there that are willing to raise their hand and say, I'll help you. And, you know, I would be remiss if I didn't at least, you know, call out my local needlework shop. Heart's Desire has just been super helpful in supporting me. I mean, I haven't even been on the market for a year yet. July will be a year. And, you know, Jean Lee out at the Attic, she was the first one that said, I'm going to take a chance. You know, let's put your stuff out here and let's make it be the sampler of the month. And she really helped me, exposed me to an audience that maybe wouldn't have found me maybe as quickly. So I'm just really grateful to those opportunities. And my desire is to pay that forward, right? To help whoever the next person is. And I may not have all the answers, but I can at least maybe help them brainstorm where they might be able to go to look for those answers.
So we've talked to so many designers who had that almost the same kind of a environment mm-hmm. growing up, where you have mother, grandmothers who are creative mm-hmm. and you're given that opportunity. And for some, it's a spark that sits there dormant for a long time, you know, while they raise kids or whatever, and then it goes. And for others, it's just a lifelong thing. But you're right. It's there, it's put in place. And then whenever you pick it up and go with it, it gives you something to work with. Is that something where, while you're going through school, you continued to stitch, or did you, take a break, so to speak?
So when I graduated high school, I went to Kansas State University and, actually lived in the 4-H house. It was like a scholarship house. And there were several girls there having the 4-H background. You know, they were sewing and crocheting and knitting and all those things. And, you know, I was barely just figuring out how to use a needle to stitch. I wasn't really a sewer. And I just remember going with some of my friends, and we again went to some type of, probably it wasn't a Ben Franklin's, but it was the type of store in the mall at the time where you could buy stamped embroidery. And they convinced me to buy this stamped embroidery baby quilt. And I wasn't expecting, I wasn't engaged, but we all bought these projects thinking, oh, these were going to be the end all be all. And so I stitched maybe a week, you know, college got in the way. And then I picked it back up when my husband and I got married and we had our first child. And she actually has that little baby quilt, and it was all done stamped, but I didn't finish it probably until right when she was born. So I'd had it for several years. And then I stitched a little bit when our kids were little, but then I put it away. I had way too many other things, you know, going. And then again, way more information than any of your viewers want to know. But several years ago, the team I was leading, we had an individual on our team that had passed away unexpectedly. And it really rocked all of us. And so my two other managers and I went to the funeral, which happened to be at the beach. And they did this beautiful service for this man. And on our way there, we all swore to ourselves we weren't going to continue to give the company 24 hours a day of our lives. And so we challenged each other to find what we were passionate about. And the one man, I like to think of him as my work husband. My work husband said, you know, I was a runner. I ran through college. You know, I could do this. So he started running and was like running like 2,000 miles a year. The other guy that was in the car with us, who was probably my work brother, he said, you know, I love playing piano. And so I said, I love stitching. And we said, we're going to hold ourselves accountable for that. And so we did. And we all kind of jumped back into those passions. And that's probably been about 8 years ago now. But it was something that allowed me to be able to say, I don't have to work all the time. I don't have to be so obsessed with this that now I can do something else. And so I'm grateful for that. I'm sad, sad, sad that we lost the individual on our team that we lost. But it allowed us, the three of us, to step back and reevaluate what was important and to make decisions in a way that would allow us to, you know, express who we were more creatively.
Oh, that's a great story. I relate to that so much because we had a young man who does our website for the magazine that I edit, and he's one of those nose to the grindstone kind of guys, mm-hmm. and he wanted to go to Japan with a couple of friends here, oh, 3 or 4 months ago, and he wrote an email to everyone and said, you know, I'd really like to go on this trip, and I hope you all don't mind that I'm going to be out for 2 weeks. And it was, and I could just hear myself, you know, oh, I can't leave the job. I can't leave the job, you know. And I wrote to him and I said, you know, I'm 69 years old. And I said, I can count on one hand the number of times I took more than 2 days and didn't do something with the job during those, you know, travel mm-hmm. or whatever, and always have my laptop or whatever. And I told him, I said, you know, take the time because you can't get it back. You'll regret it. And I regret it, you know, because what mm-hmm. did I get out of it? No, I know exactly what you mean. What did I get out of it long term for not taking the 2 weeks or 3 weeks or 4 weeks I had every year mm-hmm. while others did? I just, you know, dedicated to the job and, yeah, and you know, get nothing out of it. And yeah,
yep.
Take it. Go. Yeah. Yeah. So that really turned you loose then. Did that put you on a path to finding fun retirement or?
Actually, there were series of things that happened. And I, again, your viewers don't really know who I am. Maybe some that have met me kind of think that they know me. But I'm a big believer that if you say, okay, Lord, give me a sign, just let me know kind of that you're out there and that this is the right direction. And I was thinking about moving on from my job. You know, when you leave a job, it's not an event. It is a journey, right? It's not something that you wake up one morning and say, I'm out. Right. You start thinking about, do I really want to do something different with my life? And so about 18 months before I actually left, I kind of put that out there and said, okay, Lord, just give me a little sign that this is the right direction. And, you know, I'd get a sign here and there. And about 4 months before I actually was my last day, I had specifically asked, you know, all right, Lord, just give me a little sign out here. And I got it in a very, 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 very large way. And ironically enough, that gave me the confidence to be able to say, I want to do other things. You know, I'm reminded that history has the word his in it, H-I-S, not her story, his story, right? And so there's so many stories out there left to be told about these girls that stitch the samplers that I own. And I probably have about 125 or 130 in my collection. But I acquired the first 40, well, not the first, maybe from 4 to 50, the 46 of them from one individual. And if you don't mind, I'll tell you that story maybe it would serve as an inspiration to others. But
that's why we're here. We want to
okay.
hear it. Go for it.
Okay.
We want to hear these stories.
Okay. So in January, 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, I was, again, you know, do I really want to be doing this? And I was like, okay, Lord, just give me a little tiny little sign. And it was a Thursday night. And I was scrolling through a website I'd been on, and I thought I was in the Wichita area website, and I saw that this woman had some samplers for sale. So I private messaged her, and I said, hey, I noticed you have these 4 samplers for sale. I'd love to come by and see them. I might be interested. And she wrote back, and she said, oh, they're for an estate sale in a couple weeks. Well, what y'all don't know about me is that my dad is an auctioneer. So I grew up in the business, right? I grew up knowing about auctions. And I also knew that you should never take an answer like that as the only answer. So I said, do you take early sales? And she goes, well, yes, we would do that. And I said, okay. So I said, can I come see him on, you know, when could I come see him? And she goes, well, we're going to be back over here Saturday with that work. And again, the whole time I'm thinking I'm in the Wichita, Kansas area of this website. And I said, yeah, I could do that. I said, just tell me where you are. She was in Eastern Houston.
Oh, no.
Which from my house to Houston is like a 9.5 hour drive. And so I was like,
oops.
Okay, I said, I will see you on Saturday morning. And I went into the kitchen where my husband was that evening, and I said, "Hey, I'm going to Houston tomorrow. Do you want to go with me?" And he looked at me and he goes, "No." And I said, "Well, that's great. I'm still going. So I will just finish taking the rest of my calls in the car." And I left about 1:30, 2 o'clock that Friday night, stayed down south of Dallas, which would be from where I live, probably a good 6 hours. So I stayed south of Dallas over the night, got up at 5:30 because I was going to meet this woman at 8:30. And again, I was like, "Oh Lord, is this really what I should be doing?" You know, so I get to Houston. She greets me at the door with her sister, and she's almost giddy. And she says, "Oh, I'm so glad you're here. The antique dealer is going to be here in an hour." And I thought, "Oh my God, there's my sign, right?"
Yep, yep.
So I go inside, and she proceeds to tell me that the woman has passed away and that these samplers have been in storage since the late 70s, and that they just took them out of bags and or paper sacks and hung them on the walls, and just to let her know, you know, to let me know which ones I wanted, and they'd take them down. So I sashayed through each of the rooms in this little house. I came back and I said, "You know what? I'll take them all."
Oh no, you didn't.
And she goes, "Okay." I got 46 samplers for an ungodly reasonable price.
Oh my
and,
word.
And she said, "Now will that be PayPal or Venmo?" And I said, "Oh no, I'm paying you cash." So I paid her cash, loaded them all up, and I was in and out in less than an hour. And I was so giddy. Like, I couldn't even imagine that that's what I was going to walk into. I thought I was going to find four samplers, and that was it.
Yeah.
And to find this treasure trove of this woman's collection, and to know that my oldest sampler is from 1688. I mean, I can't even imagine that. It's crazy to think that I own something that old. Yeah. And so anyway, I get home. My house is a mess as I take him out of my car. And 2 weeks later, I get an instant message from this woman. And she says, "The daughter wants to know if I can share your information with her. She'd like to reach out to you." And I thought, oh my heavens, I wonder, you know, it made me feel kind of creepy. Like, had I done something wrong? Was it illegal? You know, all that stuff. And then I thought, no. I paid exactly what they asked for those samplers. I didn't even bargain on the price, right? I paid what they asked. And I said, sure, you can tell her to reach out to me. So the daughter reached out to me, and it was the sweetest exchange, because she said, and I'm kind of paraphrasing, she said, "I just want you to know how much I appreciate that you took all of my mom's stuff from her samplers and that they're going to a good home. It just makes me feel so good that they're going to be loved and taken care of." And I was like, okay, Lord, that's my sign, right? That this really is what I should be doing. So I have I've got several of them charted. They're just ready to roll out for releases. But I have one that will be coming out this summer that is from that collection. And I felt it was really important as I roll out the samplers from that original 46, that in the chart, it acknowledges not only the girl who stitched it, but the woman who loved them. And so there at the opening of each of the charts, there's about a paragraph and a half that tells about the story of this woman. They were living in Europe when she was collecting these. They lived in Europe. And so she had to have loved them for a long time. And I feel really honored to be able to have them in my collection and to know that they are being loved and that they didn't end up in Goodwill, that I get to share them with the world. And that's the exciting part. So, you know, when you ask about Funtirement, did I just decide? I think I decided that I would be open to whatever that next chapter was. And then as that next chapter began to unfold, I began to collect the pebbles that created the path that I ended up on. And it's a beautiful thing, because when you say you choose, right, when you Funtire and you choose what you want to do, then it allows you to choose to how you want to spend your time. And again, it's just really important to me to be able to share the story of those girls and the beauty that they spent stitching with others. So that's a long-winded answer. But I feel very strongly that if you just sit and listen sometimes, you get your answer.
I think it's interesting that you also were an educator for a while, and I kind of wonder if that doesn't fall into that looking at samplers.
Well, it might. It's funny. Several of the people that have watched my floss tube, and my floss tubes are usually 30 minutes. They're really short, but I usually always have a tech tip, and that's because the company I worked for, you know, I felt like that was my job. We should all be able to use our technology a lot better than we are. And I've had several people say to me, I could tell you're an educator even as you're teaching us about how to use our iPhone or our iPad or whatever. And I don't know, it's kind of like there's a moral obligation, right? That we have a duty to help each other. It's not a right, it's a duty. And so I kind of subscribe to that idea that if I can help somebody, that's what I want to do.
Right. That desire to teach, you know, I think, I know that's one thing I love. I'm member of a local EGA chapter, and I just love when I can teach someone else something new or help them learn a new skill. It's always exciting.
And if you can teach it, then you know that you know it too.
Right.
So you get all these samplers home. What a starting point. Holy smokes.
Yep. And I have a great son-in-law. I only have one son-in-law, but I have a great son-in-law. And he graciously took one of the walls in one of the rooms in the basement, put up a 4-foot by 8-foot pegboard for me, and allows me to now move my, because most of the samplers I got, those 46, were framed. I would say maybe only 7 or 8 were not framed. So I have them all basically on that one wall in a kind of a jig-jag layout, but they're pretty much all up there.
So you get these on a wall, and you've decided, all right, move on to the next phase of life. What's the mental process of deciding what you're going to chart and what you're going to wait till later on? Because, you know, 46 samplers, it's not like you have two when you pick one. I mean, holy smokes.
Well, I made myself a little promise, and that promise is that I don't ever want to chart anything that I wouldn't hang in my own home. And I have 46 samplers, you're right, but there are some that I don't want to chart them because they're not all that pretty and they're not interesting to me. And so, you know, I can carve off some of those and say that's never going to happen. But then there's others that I think about. What is it that makes me like them? Is it the color selection? Is it the phrase? Like I charted one early on, and the word was gratitude. And it was right as we were coming out of the pandemic. And I just felt like that spoke so loudly to where I was in my walk, in my journey, around just being so grateful. Because I knew people that had lost loved ones. You know, I was lucky. I didn't have anybody that was blood relative I lost. I had a dear, dear friend I lost, and it was because of COVID. So I chose that gratitude sampler for that very reason. And I also, sometimes when I look at my samplers, I think, just because I like them, would other people like them? You know, is there a large enough appeal that other people would want to stitch them? And right now I have one out. Well, it's not out yet. It's Isabella Roberts, 1848. I put a little teaser out on Instagram, and maybe by the time this audio runs, it might be out. It'll be in shops a week from tomorrow, which is June 15th. And it's called Isabella Roberts, 1848. And the original in the frame is 3 feet by 3 feet, and it's done in Berlin wool. Well, there's no way I was going to do it like that. So I used silk over on 40 count, and it ended up being about 15 inches by 15 inches square. And it has two King Charles Cavalier Spaniels in it. And it just speaks to me. And I think it's the dogs. So I love that because of the dogs. And I think when you decide kind of what you want to take and offer to others, you kind of have to think about the season. Like, I don't know if I'd put out a Christmas one in March, but I might put out a Christmas one later in the summer or early fall. So you have to think about that. And then I also think about, is it something that would allow others to step back and go, I want to do the same thing? So I don't know, summer hits and summer misses. I've got several more that they're ready to go. They just need to be sent to the shops. So, and I've had a model stitcher that has done 4 But most of the others I'm doing myself. So
you prefer to stitch your own? Why would that? Why is that?
Part of it is sometimes when you put color on ground cloth, it doesn't always look like it does on a spool or on an skein. And so I like the ability to be able to go, oh, I really don't like that, and then take it out, versus if I send it to a model stitcher and I send 20 of the 20 colors, they're going to stitch what I send them, whether they think it's ugly or not. And I like to be able to just say, oh, I want to change this, or I'm going to take this out and redo it using this shade a little bit darker, or a little bit lighter. So maybe as I get more comfortable with that, but most of the ones that are being stitched are just a few colors, and, you know, they're tried and true colors. G. Hubbard has kind of red, white, and blue, and gold. That's hard to screw up, right? So, and then same way with Dorothy Stretton. Dorothy Stretton is all three skeins of Weeks Dye Works Swamp Water. But it's a beautiful sampler, all just one color. And the reason I think it's beautiful is because the verse that's on it that she chose, and the fact that if you read her story, she was one of, I think, 14 children. And no wonder she picked the verse that she picked, right? I mean, suffer the little children to come unto me. She knew what that was like, to have to be in a big family. So I don't know. You just have to kind of ask yourself, is this something that you are really loving the colors, or do you want some wiggle room? And if the answer is I have wiggle room, then I'm probably going to stitch it myself. And I love stitching. That's the other thing. I love the rhythm and the methodical process of just in and out, in and out, in and out. So
the charting learning curve, steep.
Oh, I'm so glad you asked me that. So again, I worked for a very large technical company, and I love technology. I've always been a nerd. I've always been a gadget head. I've always loved figuring out how things work. And so when I decided I was going to start charting, I did a lot of kind of investigation and exploration. And I've always been an Apple girl, always. And so I found a program called Mobi Stitch, M-O-B-I, and the word Stitch.
You worked for Microsoft and you're an Apple girl. Okay. All right. That's
no, I didn't work for Microsoft. Wrong. It wasn't Microsoft. Maybe the other one. So I found that Mobi Stitch would work on my iPad. So I usually almost always chart on my iPad using an Apple Pencil. Then I connect my iPad to my Mac. I open up the file that sits on that iPad. I drag that onto my Mac, open it up in Mac Stitch, and maybe make 5% of my changes there. Anything that's just fine tuning. And then from there, I take that and I dump it into the desktop publishing site of Pages. And then I export from there and send it digitally to my printer, to the company that's printing for me. It's a shop locally. So for me, it wasn't a big deal, because prior to joining in my former life, I wrote the district newsletter for the school district for 17 years every month. Yeah. So I knew how to do desktop publishing. I know how to write. I'd written a dissertation for my doctorate. I mean, I know how to write. And so it wasn't a big deal. It was just almost like everything that I had worked for or on had kind of converged. And it allowed me to take what I knew and put that together with what I loved. And so to me, it hasn't been a big deal. I've had a lot of people say, how can you chart on your iPad? Well, from a learning standpoint, I find it much easier, because the transfer loss, if I'm looking down from where my iPad is to where my pencil is to the chart or to the sampler, there's less likelihood of loss than if I'm looking at the sampler and then casting my eyes up 14 inches and then back down again. It's less loss. So to me, it works great. I've helped several people do that. There's a great Facebook group that supports Mac Stitch and Win Stitch, and I've been in that one and helped others too. So if you're out there and you're listening and you need some help, feel free to reach out to me. I'm happy to help you. So it's pretty easy once you get going.
That's great. So, all right. So you've got these samplers now. You got they're all framed, and you're going to chart them. You got to take them out of the frame, and so you got that whole process to learn, so you don't damage them.
Yeah, I worked with a gal named Michelle Pagan, and she was a gal during COVID that I was able to listen to on an Eventbrite Zoom lecture, and I really liked what she had to say about sampler preservation and how she went about it. And at the end, she kind of shared her credentials. And she actually does conservation work for the Smithsonian. So I reached out to her. And one of the samplers of the 46 I got was really in bad shape. And I said, could you help me? And she said, absolutely. And so I sent it off to her. She did some conservation work on it and sent it back to me. And then I got online and tried to learn as much as I could, you know, about simple conservation and things I should or shouldn't do. And, you know, unless I'm going to chart it, it's still hanging in a frame. And if I'm charting it, like I took one out today and was pleasantly surprised with what I found on the back, but it had been reframed in the late 70s, kind of had that mauve pink on it. And whoever had framed it, they put the gauze, like a gauze backing or muslin backing on it, but then they glued that to this god-awful frame around it. No. So, you know, that's when you just have to be very, very careful and you do end up with some loss. But then they had stitched it to cardboard, so I just cut the back of the cardboard with a pair of scissors to release the threads. But, again, you just have to be really careful. When I have a complimentary chart that's out on my website right now called Oak Bank School. And I had decided that I was going to do Oak Bank School as a freebie. And so, you know, I'm like, okay, I foolishly stitched it without taking it out of the frame, foolishly. And I thought, you know, maybe I should take it out of the frame. And I was done with the model. So I took it out of the frame. And as I'm taking it out of the frame, in the back is a greeting card with the date 1993 on it. And I am freaking out. I'm like, oh my God, this is like what you would find on Expedition Unknown, right? With Josh Gates as he's digging in the pyramids, right? You find something that you didn't expect to find. And so I carefully opened up the greeting card. And again, the sampler only says Oak Bank School. I didn't have a name. I didn't have a year. And I'd written to several Oak Bank schools and none of them were the school I was looking for. So I open up this card, and the card is dated September 1st, 1993. And I'm paraphrasing, but the gist of it was the sampler was stitched by my mother, Jemima Fortune Cunningham, when she was in Oak Bank School at such and such an age in Glasgow, Scotland.
Wow.
I thought I was in a ball. Like, I was just like so overcome with emotion that I was able to find who this little girl was. This woman had laid it at my feet. And so then you go on and you read the card, and she includes in it the tag or the receipt for having had it framed. And her letter, her card is dated September 1st. The receipt is dated August 31st. So what that told me was she brought this home framed. And then she handwrote this letter about her mama, and she peeled back the paper that was inside this, that was part of the frame. And she carefully stuffed this card into the back of the sampler, and then she sealed it back up. And I was just like, oh my gosh. And when I found the back of it, I was so off on the color, it wasn't even funny. And, but because it had been hidden, part of it had been hidden. But more importantly, I found the girl. I knew who she was. And because her daughter shared all that information, I was able to locate her and to put her story together and to share that literally with the world. And I wouldn't have been able to do that had her daughter not put that card in the back. So I don't know. You just never know what you're going to find when you take off the back. My biggest concern right now is what I do with all this old glass, because, you know, it's not very stable, and I hate throwing it away, but I don't know what to do with the old glass on the frame. Some of them are really old. So, but it's cool what you find in the back when you're not expecting it. That's for sure.
Wow.
That is such a neat story.
Well, and it's, I mean, you can download it, and whether you stitch it or not, it's worth it just to get the story. It's on the website too.
Oh, that's cool. But so the colors, you were way off. Did you go back and make adjustments or stick with what you did?
You know, I stuck with what I had, but I put a picture of the original on the front of the chart. And since then, several people have stitched it and have tagged me in it. So I get to see what they've put on it. One of the gals did it at Christmas, and she added the verse at the top, "Come let us adore him," and then Oak Bank School. And I thought that was lovely. And I think she did it in green. But the original color was this deep, deep boysenberry red. And I had stitched it in kind of this dusty plum, like it had faded quite a bit. Yeah. So it's a beautiful little piece. And it's, I don't know, very, very small, maybe 3 inches by 4 inches at the most.
That's very so neat. So as you're charting these things, then it sounds to me like you're the learning curve is ongoing. You're little discoveries all the way along with each one. Each one is its own adventure.
It is. It's totally its own adventure. And, you know, sometimes when you, my husband's pretty good about, you know, I'll say, oh, here's what I found, or here's what I've done. And, you know, you can tell he's like, okay, that's nice. But, you know, he's not as excited about it. But when I stitch with a group on Sundays on Zoom, the remote stitchers. And when I share with them, they're so excited for me. So that's always fun. And then I stitch with another group of gals on Thursday night and share it with them. And they always love it too. So it's great to get that reinforcement, even though they don't live next door to me or even in my own town. So it just reminds me how important it is for the connections on social media, whether it's Facebook or Instagram or YouTube, that it really does matter. Because when I started back 100 years ago in 1981, when I married my husband, you didn't have that. If the people that you were stitching with didn't live near you, you didn't get that reinforcement. And I remember distinctly the first direct message I got from a woman in Tasmania when I put out one of my very first charts. It was W. Wallace. And she reached out to me, and I was like, oh my God, she's on the other side of the world. And it was just, it was so cool to know that we had this shared connection and this shared love of the needle, and to be able to connect with her, even though we had never met. And then I was lucky enough to be able to meet her in March of this year. But, you know, you just never know what you've stitched and how that's going to connect with someone. And then that causes them to reach out and form a relationship with you. And I think the more that we realize how small the world really is, the more likely it is that we're all going to get along a lot better. So I think that if the needlework can help bridge that gap, I think that's a really good thing.
Yeah. And we've said a lot of times, that's the one good thing that has come out of the pandemic is, you know, these Zoom or meetings, because, you know, we didn't want to be isolated, and it was the only way to meet. So yeah, that is the nice thing. And then, you know, cause you know, the husband's eyes, mine glaze over like, yeah, okay, you're stitching that. And they look at you like, okay, yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
But then you show your friends on online, and they're like, wow, that's fantastic or whatever. So it's just great. It's just great. So it sounds like you chart mainly from using the back colors.
If I can get to it, I like to honor what the little girl saw when she put them together. Now, I will tell you, I have one right now that it is so hideously gross. And I think that's a hyphenated word, if you want to know, hideously gross, that I was just like, oh, hell no, I'm not charting it like that. It was bad. And the front wasn't any better. Like, oh, this poor child had to have had some color issues. So what I've done there is I've used the colors that she chose, but not necessarily in the places that she put them. So some of the garishness has been toned down, and it's maybe a little bit more pleasing. It was hideous. Like, but I really liked it when I acquired it, because, and I bought this at an online auction. The frame was really cool. It was in the original frame, and it has a cow on it. And I'm a sucker for a cow. So I thought, I can do something with this. So it'll come out probably in the next 6 months. I have the model stitched. It's done. But yeah, the colors were just hideous.
She wanted to go out and play baseball.
She did. She's like, none of this sewing business. Mama says I have to do it until I get done and then I can go outside. So she just took whatever she could reach.
Oh, man. That's funny. That is hilarious. So do you do your, are you thinking about doing some of your own designs, or are you mainly sticking to the, I mean, you have a lot of samplers to reproduce, but.
What I've done is I've got several different, whether it's a guild or an event or a, I guess event's the best word for it, that I have been asked to be a designer. And none of them have been announced yet. They'll be announced later. And those, I've used samplers as the inspiration. And then maybe they're smalls, maybe it's a piece of it. I'm not necessarily charting just samplers, put it that way. I admire so much the work that's done by Plum Street and Blackbird Designs and Brenda Gervais. I'm not there yet. I don't know that I'll ever be there yet. And for me, it's really about being able to preserve the history of the girl that stitched it in some way, shape, or manner. So I don't know that I would just create a design out of the air, although I have an idea for something I'm going to do at my 1-year anniversary in July that'll be out just complimentary for people. But I probably will stick a lot with the samplers or the sampler for inspiration to whatever it is that's being put out. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Now, when you do these things, are you do you start with DMC, or what? How are you selecting ground cloth and thread? What's your approach?
That's a great question. So I typically will try and match the cloth as close as possible, but I know that a lot of them have become stained with tobacco or soot or just dirt. And so I kind of am one of those that kind of shies on the lighter side from a ground cloth perspective. But I get out my good old DMC flip chart that has the real cloth or the real fibers that are sewn onto it with the numbers. And I literally go, does this match? Does this match? Does this match? Does this match? And then so I get my DMC conversion. And then a lot of mine also I do conversions for SWA 103. And I'll do that similarly, but there is no book out. So I literally just open up my little drawers because I have them all categorized. And I just lay the spools. Does this match? Does this match? Does this match? Does this match? So it's still pretty manual. Like I don't have a chart that says, if you see this color, then it's this color. I'm still making sure that it matches. And that's another reason why if I'm going to stitch a model, if it's got a lot of colors in it, I like being the one stitching it because I may change the shade here or there just to, because of the way it lays against the cloth or other fibers.
Yeah. All right. When you do that, this is really minute, detailed thing, but what do you use for lighting? Do you use any special lighting? Because, I mean, that plays such a huge role.
Yeah. I actually have... In my little studio in the basement, I have some great lighting. So I don't have anything special other than what we originally put in, which are just some great, great lighting from the ceiling. And then I stitch in front of a cathedral-shaped window in the front. We call it our office, but the front office of our house. And so I have normal sunlight. And then if I'm really not sure, I actually go out on the porch and see what the sun tells me. If I'm holding it in the sun, what does it look like? Because Kansas has some of the most beautiful blue skies with beautiful clear air, and you get a real good sense of what the color looks like then. But typically it's whatever the lighting is in my basement and then this huge cathedral window we have in our office.
Okay, so you were fortunate when you put the basement together and you chose lighting that's working for you. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I just wonder about that, especially with LED lighting these days.
Yeah.
There's such a range of what you can get, and a range within any given fixture that, you could really, really throw yourself off just with the lighting you have.
Yep, totally agree. And it's funny how some hue will pull blue or almost a purple hue, and then others will be kind of that yellow or brown. And either way, it's still not what you're looking for, right? You got to figure it out. And then I'm also reminded that most of those little girls probably stitched by candlelight. So, right. You know, what they thought they were stitching and what it really looked like might have been two different things.
Yeah. Smoky yellow light. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
All right. Before we run out of time, and we're, of course, doing that as we always do, talk about these hoop stacks.
Okay.
So I had to study those pictures. That's different.
Okay. So a hoop stack is basically an object that allows you to take the hoops that you have, whether you collect them or you just have different sizes, and put them in a format that you could set them out. So if you think about it, most of us that stitch, if we stitch with a hoop, which I do stitch with a hoop, but I use the sewing method in that hoop. When I'm not using the other five or six hoops of various sizes, they're in a drawer and nobody gets to see them. And so I was, again, on an online auction, and they had this thing, an antique in a box. And I thought, huh. So I was lucky enough to get the bid. Nobody bid against me, actually. Got the bid, came to my house, took it out, and I thought, I know a guy that can make these for me. And so I reached out to a guy that I know, and I said, could you help me design this and put this out there? And he's like, yeah. So the first three colors are out, red, dark blue, light blue. And then I'm going, after we get done recording, I'm going to pick up the wooden ones tonight, and they'll be on the website tonight or tomorrow. And tomorrow would be June the 9th. So they'll be out there tomorrow. And it's been crazy how people have gravitated to it. They're like, oh my gosh, that's such a great idea. And with the craze around collecting old embroidery hoops, whether they're Gibbs, Hold Tight, or the Queen, or the Duchess, or the Princess hoops, it gives us a way to add that to kind of the ambiance of where we stitch or our nest or whatever you want to call it. And it lets other people see the beauty of those wooden hoops too. And you know, you think about how many hours they were held by some girl's hand, or a young woman or an older woman who stitched using the same hoop her entire life. Sometimes when you find those with that beautiful wooden patina on them, you know that they have a story to tell. So the hoop stack, you know, it's available on my website, and believe it or not, people are really liking it. So it's kind of fun.
Well, I even thought, I like when I teach at our library, sometimes there's no hoops. And so I have to bring my hoops. And you know, those rings, they fall on the ground, they roll around. And I thought, ooh, one of those acrylic ones would be great just to stack those plastic ones there and put them out and say, okay, grab a hoop if you need one. Just to have. It'd be a great way to corral them and also display them. You're right, in your stitching spot. I don't think it necessarily needs to be the antique wood ones.
No, it can be any of them. Yeah.
Right. I thought it was a fabulous idea. And if I wasn't doing not one more thing, it would be in my shopping cart tomorrow. But I got to wait at least a month. I got to see if I can get Gary to buy one first. Because if he caves first, then I'm free.
Yeah, we're doing a year. We started June 1. We're doing a year where we're not everything's from stash, so
that's great.
Well, we'll see. We're 8 days in, so it's great so far.
See, and I'm trying to tempt Gary, because then if he caves, then I'm free. But I don't know.
Yeah, I think daily I've received a temptation from you.
Yes.
Thanks a lot. Mm-hmm.
You're welcome.
Yeah. No, but when I saw that, because I have a stack of hoops here that every time I need to get something out of that cubby, you know, the hoops kind of go everywhere. Yep. And I've thought, you know, how I need to do something with these hoops so they aren't just all kind of stacked willy nilly. And then I saw that, and now knowing that there's a wood one coming, oh boy, I'm all in.
Yep, it'll be out easily in the next 24 hours. So watch the website. I'll probably put something on social media as well too. But I've had several people say, "Would you make the wood one?" And I said, "I would. It's being made. It's just taken longer than the acrylics did." So. Part of it was just getting the materials to get it made. But, I'm picking them up this afternoon.
Okay. All right.
That's great.
I think what I'm going to do, Beth, is start a list. And then next June,
okay,
going to be a massive capital outlay of
yeah.
Yeah. Shipments will be coming in for weeks. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. And our spouses will be like, what in the world?
Yeah. What was that? Yep. All right. We got to wrap up here, Ray. So tell us what's the next one? What's your, what's coming up here in the next 2 or 3 months that people can look for?
Well, obviously Isabella Roberts, 1848, she's coming out. She's got those two King Charles, King Cavalier Spaniels. That's just beautiful. Has a boy and a girl in it, as well as a beautiful verse and a huge Solomon's Temple. So if you like red and you like Solomon's Temple or you like dogs, it's really pretty. And it has a peach border, which is very unusual as well. So she's coming out. And then I've got...
Wait, no, back up just a minute here.
Yeah.
Red, let's turn the tables a little bit. Tell Beth more about red threads and a sampler and
King Solomon. That's one of those motifs. Yeah. I always look at those and I'm like, oh, that is so cool.
Yeah. Well, and the cool part about this King Solomon is I thought maybe I had something tied to the Masonic rite or the Freemasons. So I actually reached out to the Masonic National Museum in Massachusetts and I spoke with a woman there and she assured me it's not. She said, your sampler has motifs that are found in the Scottish Rite, but it is not necessarily a religious sampler. And I said, how can you tell? And she said, well, for one thing, there's no other religious motif in it. And she said it wasn't uncommon during that time period to actually include a Solomon's Temple as a sign of virtue, that if the sampler was being stitched and you included something that was virtuous, then the assumption was that the girl who stitched it was virtuous. And she said, more than likely, that's what's happened here. And so she was very, very helpful. She had not seen one like what I have. I sent her a picture of it. I wasn't able to find Isabella Roberts. Believe it or not, that's an extremely common name. And with 1848 as the year that it was finished, it's hard to know how old she was when she started it. And if you recall earlier on when we were talking, this is the one that I have that when it was finished and framed is 3 feet by 3 feet done in Berlin wool. So I chose instead to focus on the aspects of the sampler and how whoever this little girl was, why she stitched it and maybe why she chose the motifs that she did. I kind of make an argument around that. And the lady that I spoke to was very, very helpful in kind of what I compiled and put together. So I think there's an appeal there. We'll see. I like it. So we'll see if other people like it.
Well, and I think it's interesting that one is, it's square.
It is square. Yeah.
So that's an interesting shape because they're normally, like they're normally like a rectangular, portrait or landscape.
Yep. No, it's completed. It's square. The Solomon's Temple that's on it is more rectangular in shape, but it's a great one to take if you're going to a retreat or an event because you can do the outline and then there's just fill in. So the border could be fill in, the Solomon's Temple could be fill in. The only over one is the words. It's not a lot, and it's really wasn't that bad. I did it on 40 count, and it wasn't bad at all. That's coming out. And then I have one of the first ones coming out from the collection I acquired in Houston. That's coming out. And then I have a couple other little ones that'll be out toward the end of the summer. They're just ready to roll. I just released about 3 weeks ago, the 1st of May, Maggie Pepperell came out, 1887. She's a little red. And the cool part about Maggie is that you could stitch her up in just a few days, but she's a nice little one to add to your red collection or your red wall. So she's out as well. So my goal is to try and do one a month, and yeah. I'm easily on target for that. So not too worried about it.
Well, that's great. That's great. All right. So by next June, we'll have 12 that we can put on our list. Okay.
Oh, you'll have way more than that. You'll have way more than that. I guarantee it. You'll have way more than that.
That's just what we need. Yeah, just a nice long list.
I'll see if I can enable you a little.
thanks. So yeah, and remember, Gary likes blue.
Oh, Gary, I have a little blue one. It's very sweet, very, very sweet. A little blue one coming out. It's got the initials E and F, No other name on it, nothing, just EF. So I'm calling it my EF sampler.
Okay.
So, but it's really sweet. It's got some blues, different shades of blue, and some kind of golds. It's very pretty.
Okay.
There you go.
All right. All right. We'll put it on the list. We're never going to make it, Beth.
I know we're not. No, we're not. We're not. If we can make it a month,
yeah, not going to happen. All right. Ray, thanks so much. RedBarnSamplers.com. Quite a story. Follow Ray on Facebook and Instagram, Red Barn Samplers.
Floss Tube. Got a Floss Tube channel out there too. So
off to a great start with some great samplers. Thank Good for you.
Thank you. I appreciate the support, and I really just appreciate the stitching community. So thank you for the opportunity today.
Yep.
Yeah. Thank you for talking to us.
You bet.
Thanks to everyone for listening.